Hi, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Monday, July 8th, 1996. In the Creekside Room this afternoon, our speaker is Bill Lockard. Today's session number is 1 and is titled Deaf People, Family, Neighbors, Church, Doctor, Social Services, Friends. Let's listen in.
My name is Bill Lockard. And the title of this session is Deaf People, Family, Neighbors, Family Doctor, Church Clergy, Social Services, Friends, yes. I am Bill Lockard. And I'm the executive director of a new upstart social service agency that is operated out of Chester County, Pennsylvania, a suburb of Philadelphia. Well, to start off, Sarah is hard of hearing. Beth is deaf. So we have three communication things happening here. If you don't mind, I will try to serve also as a moderator. So if you have something to say, please raise your hand. I mean, literally, raise your hand. Not really for me to identify, just so that everybody knows that you want to speak. And then when I point to you, then go ahead. That gives the person, these two, an opportunity to also raise their hand. And the cues for speaking or signing in turn are very different. So I'll try to maintain a handle on that, and we'll go forward with that. And then Dan will voice and sign. He'll sign for you guys, or voice for you guys, and sign vice versa. I was trying to think of a marketing tool to get people to come to this workshop. Basically, the workshop is to deal with the mission and vision of the social service agency that I'm the director of, and why it got started. And it really comes down to that little chart that I put up there and became the heading of the workshop. The agency got set up because the typical support systems that we all assume we have, we just have them. I'm not talking about specialty supports, just the things we know we have. Now, not every hearing person has all of these, but in general, we all have these as hearing people. If you look at the typical support system of a deaf person, typical, you can take family and throw it out the window. You can take neighbors and throw it out the window. Family doctor, church and clergy. Who knows what's next? Social services, your local social service agency. And the last one is our friends. And that you can have. Deaf people do have friends. Now, on the surface, yes, deaf people have families. But what prevents these things from being effective supports is communication. If you don't have communication, then the support that you have is certainly not equivalent. And if it's not the kind of thing that you go to for support, then it isn't a support system. Now, what I hope to do is eventually draw that little comparison chart to the typical social service system services that are run by government. And those social services tend to be children, youth, and families, aging services, mental health services, mental retardation, drug and alcohol, employment, and there's probably something else, but you've got the gist. And those are all services not only that governments tend to give out freely when needed, but within each of those services is a multitude of private agencies and private services that are also accessible. So that if a hearing person was having almost any kind of emotional challenge, stress, take your pick. You could get counseling for it. Eating disorder, marital problems, male gender issues, blah, blah, blah. And that's all great because they're all needed. If you were to look at what is available for deaf people, you would not believe it. So I want to start off with some overall concepts. The Americans with Disabilities Act says that all services, doctors, post office, you name it, they all need to be accessible. However, they add a very interesting addition. And that addition is that we are supposed to no longer isolate people with disabilities. All people are supposed to be included. Now, what's interesting is that that becomes a real paradox for deaf people. Because the whole concept of the Americans with Disabilities Act and any disability act says that we can no longer operate on the old theory of equal treatment. The old theory was it's in the army, it's in the classroom, it's in our families. We all get treated alike. Nobody's treated special. And that works and is to be reinforced in many situations. However, the Disability Acts say that doesn't work, we know, for people with disabilities. Because equal treatment means everybody has one step up into the building. Everybody's going to hear my voice, etc., etc. And although it sounds fine when you're dealing with very similar kinds of people, once you try to add diversity to your group, you start finding out that that basically easy concept, we're going to give one test. Well, now you find out the people with learning disabilities and dyslexia can't take it, and they always fail. So the new concept is equal opportunity, which means everybody has to be on fair ground. So that if you are hearing my voice, which is the service here, she is getting the same information. So that when I say, what's the name of my agency? There's equal opportunity. Nobody has any more information, etc. Okay. I got started, my wife and I got started working in community services in a relatively rural area outside of Philadelphia. And we got started due to a lawsuit in which a family services was about ready to take the fourth of four hearing children from two deaf parents. During the entire time that they had been going through the process of doing what they are mandated to do, which is intervene, supply parenting skills, etc., 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 we were not looking at equal opportunity for this family. The service providers who went in couldn't communicate with the parents. Worse than that, the providers that went in had no sensitivity training or understanding of deaf issues. So they went in with a multitude of stereotypes and ignorance. The first of which was, there's no way these parents can parent hearing children. Now you shake your heads, but that is so common, and that stereotype fits into every single aspect of life. Those people can't drive. Those people, I can't imagine they could operate that machine, be a counselor, be a teacher, be a police officer, be a preacher. And a lot of it is because there's been no exposure to deaf and hard of hearing people. This particular family was a needy family, and they led my wife and I to the court system, the mental health system, the prison, employment, everywhere. And everywhere we went, we could not believe the ignorance and inadequacy and covering up and defensiveness of the providers that we engaged. Psychiatrists, judges, chiefs of police, documents were faked, psychological diagnoses were put down with absolutely no qualifications. The qualifications of this interpreter are so much more rigid than the qualifications of any teacher that works with deaf and hard of hearing children. And this person's signing skills are so far above most teachers, and yet his and mine are so far below most deaf people's signing skills that it becomes a very interesting process to try to create equal opportunity with and for deaf people. So the challenge of our social service organization was to, and our mission is to do three things. One is to provide comprehensive, across the spectrum, social services in a direct way. Either a deaf person being the provider or an extremely competent hearing person, experienced, tested, qualified by standards within that specialty group. Number two would be to take that group of center experts to consult with and lift up mainstream agency services. So that if there was a Children, Youth, and Family Services, that this group would work with them to jack up their services, let them know what the issues were, what the needs were, etc., etc., etc. So we're now looking at working with police officers, domestic violence, crime victims, because the center could never satisfy all the services. You just couldn't employ that many people, and there aren't enough deaf and hard of hearing people to warrant having this mass of, quote, experts just waiting, you know. And the third part of our mission is to really jack up the level of community information, knowledge about each other. Deaf and hard of hearing people knowing a lot about the system, and hearing people, and hearing people knowing a lot more about deaf people. Because without that education and awareness base, all of your other efforts are just, you know. And we have several projects in which we do that kind of interaction. We have a call testing service for 911, for example, because 911 operators must be accessible to deaf callers. And deaf callers use TTYs. Well, 911 operators consistently fail. We're talking 50 to 75% of the time across the nation, 100% of the time in most areas that have had no contact and no encouragement and reinforcement.
Fail what? What are you saying? Fail what?
Well, what?
Sorry. Fail what? You said they consistently fail.
Deaf people make an emergency call on their TTY. The emergency operator answers. Holden Village 911. What's your emergency? Deaf person doesn't hear that. Types on their TTY. Dying, dying, help. Go ahead. Person on the other end hears these funny beeps, said, it's a fax machine.
Oh.
Or they say, hello, hello. And the person has tapped a couple times. Beep, beep, beep. Hello. Hello? And it's a prank call. Or, since they haven't answered on TTYs before, and if, in the rare instance, they recognize the signal, they screw up and they hit the wrong button on their TTY, which they so rarely use, that they disconnect. So they're, what we've done is gotten emergency services providers, not only 911, but police and domestic, anybody who operates hotlines, and pulled deaf people together and had deaf people make test calls and log them, and had the providers log what they received, brought both back together and compared notes, so that the deaf people learn about what the emergency services providers need to do, how they do it. The deaf people then can take that back to their community. The providers find out what compatibility problems there are, what signals to hear for, the kind of visual English that many deaf people use, and how to work with that. And they take it back to their people. So that's just an example of lifting the community up so that everybody understands each other. An example of a unique situation that a typical provider would just not understand. Let's take a domestic violence situation. We'll say it's a hearing man and a deaf woman. Now, I just talked about a TTY, a deaf person's phone, their connection with the world. Okay. So, how might a hearing husband abuse a deaf wife? Specifically, how might they do it? As different from what they might do with a hearing wife. Any?
They might disconnect or disable the TTY.
Exactly. A basically simple concept. They might take it with them to work. Exactly. Relatively simple. But if you consider the fact that if it's an abusive situation, there's a likelihood that that gentleman has already kind of restricted that woman's life. So she probably doesn't have family, obviously, neighbors. You can see how this is totally out of the question now. That woman has no connection here. Because once the friends have been cut off, and the TTY is the last straw on that, done. So, but for domestic service providers, unless they just, never thought of that. And it works the same in almost every service area. A related area would be, and one that hearing people rarely think of, its impact. And the impact is evident in every aspect of that. Is what's called, what we've come to call, communication violence.
I'd like to add, we left out deaf-blind people, and one abusive case that I worked with where was a deaf-blind man, and he had a deaf... Two deaf men had, had a deaf wife and a hearing son, and his wife and son took his Braille machine away and his Braille newspaper and they fingers both their hands, you know, so they could, people were bothering him. He didn't want to help those people, and he didn't know if he could get help. And we're in the house, and they tried to finger spell my hand. Who's the social worker? And I tried to figure out who the social worker was, and he was so isolated from the world by himself. That's an example of a deaf-blind situation, or it's abusive.
It's an excellent example of communication violence. When social workers, teachers, cops go into a situation in which there's a deaf and hearing person, deaf wife, hearing husband, who do you think they get the story from? Now, domestic violence situation. But let's not say it's a domestic violence situation. The typical situation is not. The typical situation is somebody else speaks for the deaf person. Now, if you understand that 90% of deaf children have hearing parents, and probably a strong 75% or 90% of those parents communicate very ineffectively with their children. I wonder what the ability of those people is to speak for and children, spouses. And so you have children speaking for deaf mom and pop. All the time. Cops interviewing and using children to find out what's happening, etc., etc. Deaf adults being totally out of control in a situation. Which is why a deaf and hard of hearing service center is so key to to having a place where they can go and say, I don't have to come here and be broken to come here. I can come here to communicate what it is I want and not look, have everybody in the office looking at me. Just imagine going to a Russian social service agency and sitting down and talking to a Russian psychiatrist. You know, I mean, it's just, you'd never do it. You just wouldn't go. So the issues become very interesting. I, unfortunately, left my reading glasses. So I don't know if I can read this, but I left them... I might need the interpreter for this. For communication purposes, to give you an idea, and we know this, but when you start thinking about, well, when we talk about communication, what is that? So I wrote down examples of communication. Now picture a deaf child or adult, whomever, in a situation in which these things that we all accept don't happen, happen wrong, or there's an extreme struggle so that you only get a tiny bit of it. Now he has to read my writing, and I have to try to read. So let's see. I can't read it at all.
This is a communication struggle.
It is. Wait a minute, let me see. I've got some of it. It has to do with sharing. Communication as sharing. Giving, getting. Testing, moaning, sobbing, laughing, listening. Communication comes back. For you to feel important, you need to be able to listen to the other person. Tease, play, support, affirm, dispute, scold, criticize, reinforce, love, experiment, grieve, complain, pray, question, something, father as a verb, mother as a verb, teach, worship. That's just a very small list of what communication is. And if you feel very restricted, imagine being restricted in fathering, worshiping, disputing, etc., etc., etc. So that they were not things you could assume you could do in most circumstances. Next, assume that you don't do those things in most circumstances from age zero up. How good do you think you are of a disputer, supporter by age 10? How good of a supervisor could you possibly be by age 20 if you have not done those basic things, you know, hundreds and hundreds of times? So what you have is you're working with a population that oftentimes has not been trained to even advocate for themselves. And when they do, they usually are ignored and not understood. I know that my wife Beth is going to do a whole workshop on specific issues in regard to a church environment. And it's funny because there are the key, if you were to just eliminate, sort of reduce that, you'd probably find out the real basic ones that many people turn to are family, church, friends, maybe, I don't know. Well, the church is perhaps one of the most detested, despised institutions within most deaf people, according to their experiences. Not Christianity necessarily, however, most people who've had a bad experience with a thing, a church, tend to, you know, that's it, that's the same thing. Similarly, is family. And everybody has family struggles. But to see families that intentionally would not go back to their homes even for Christmas, Thanksgiving, birthdays, we all know those can be both highly enjoyable times, but also stressful times. Imagine the stress when you don't even know what's happening at the dinner table. There are very, very few dinner tables I have been to with mixed deaf families where there is even baby communication. And the deaf people are just totally ignored. Totally ignored, with little tidbits of information fed after the fact, without the opportunity. And if the deaf person's experience often is when they do find out what happened, somebody died, somebody bought a red sweater, it's already been discussed. They say, what? She bought a red sweater. And they say, oh yeah, I went with them. And everybody says, yeah, we already told them. They don't speak up again. The church experience, obviously, is very similar. And how and why that occurs, it's hard to say. It's not that easy to learn sign language, but the history has been, as it is politically and legally, to insist upon equal treatment, oddly enough. And that has just squashed deaf people worse than any other disability, because now the very thing that enables deaf people to have deaf schools where they can all communicate, finally, and they can be the prom queen and the football star and the jerk at the dinner table, you know, the clown, all that the mix is what makes a life. Well, now people like school districts are saying, that's not what the law says. The law says we are not allowed to set up specialty programs because the history is that we shunt off people with disabilities into institutions, and that is not fair. Now, for people with most disabilities, that ends up being very true. And the opportunities within a mainstreamed environment are much greater. Although now we're starting to find that many children with disabilities, their parents who had high hopes for their children in mainstream settings, want to go back to a more sane setting. But with deaf and hard of hearing children especially, they're not put in with other people. They're put into an isolated situation among other people, in which it makes it worse. At least there, So it's not an easy issue to deal with. Our mission is clearly challenged, but we're all challenged in trying to do this integration.
And something that I've heard, like the blind people feel the same way. They prefer to be together in their own school. Like Helen Keller said herself that blindness is separate from things, but they're separate from people. Deaf are separate from people, blind are separate things because of communication.
Right. Yeah. Let's take a look at children, youth, and families issues. Typically, children, youth, and families providers become involved in a family situation in which there is some report of abuse or neglect. Now, what would abuse or neglect of a child be with deaf parents? Or what might a report be that comes in? And if the report came in, what services would that agency then provide to help the family prevent the neglect or abuse? There are almost no foster parents trained to provide that kind, if needed, of removal from the family on a temporary basis. There are almost never any social service providers trained to go in and deal with the families themselves. So there is no in-home parenting skills. There is no parenting skills of possible foster parents, which would then perhaps facilitate the children getting back. There is no training of adoptive parents. And there is, generally speaking, no access from the deaf community to typical parent education classes. Now, me as a parent knows it is tough business. It's just tough stuff. Lots of times I don't know what to do. I overhear things on the radio. Oh, there's an idea. I see things on the TV. I listen to what my neighbors say and what my family and friends tell me. I'm getting feedback and information to help me become a good parent from a million sources. Deaf people's source is friends, other like people who, generally speaking, also have a very limited perspective because they also. So, sure.
And that many deaf have third and fourth grade reading levels because, you know, they don't have teachers who can communicate well enough and teach them as they grow up in school because English is a second language, and therefore the people have access to newspapers and TV also to get information. They have that limited more limited access to that, those resources.
Did you catch?
was saying that, you know, the average deaf person has third, fourth grade reading level, and therefore that, you know, because they're so behind, you know, the teachers, they don't have good skills at teaching English, and English being a second language for many of the deaf, therefore the deaf cannot access the information as well from books and newspapers and magazines and TV. So it's a limitation there. People assume deaf get that information from reading, but it's not always true.
I was just wondering, when you were talking about the lack of training in social services or, and, you know, the church setting could be as well, I gather you're talking about more than people who know sign language, or but even that is minimally available. Like to have an interpreter goes to a house where there's a deaf person, is it very common that they have an interpreter to bring with them from a different agency? Or would that be a rare exception?
It depends. Generally speaking, agency reps would not know the resources of where to get interpreters. They would be very reluctant, if it was found, to hire an interpreter because of budget reasons. But in the circumstance where, let's say, they did have the interpreter and they went, it's very unlikely they have much beyond an extremely elementary perspective of what the issues are. And it's not having the language connection, it's understanding the meat of it and what the potential is. My reading, let's take a teacher and compare that to preacher, family, whatever it is. Most teachers of deaf and hard of hearing kids, especially mainstream ones. Now, teachers in residential schools have lots of contact with lots of different deaf children and adults. Professionals, idiots, drunkards, prisoners. Most teachers in mainstream programs have only seen 6 to 9 year olds or 10 to 13 year olds. They've never seen and certainly have interacted very minimally with deaf adults. Now the connection is, I interact every day with hearing people. I see them at the supermarket, I see jerks when I drive, I see handsome people, I see smart people. So when I see hearing kids, I know what they can become. In all its massive diversity, and in my whole teaching approach, I'm sort of working what to avoid, what to watch out for, what to be careful of. I pull people in as representatives. Teachers of deaf kids have no idea what these kids can become. Therefore, they have the tiniest expectations for them and the most restrictive view of possibilities. How would they deal with drug and alcohol problems? With their families? With the community? All that stuff that hearing kids get all the time. So to imagine a teacher of the deaf that would not be a requirement and some sort of standardization to bring in people, to set up curriculums that insisted upon getting that information to teachers, to students that obviously already have a restricted view, is unbelievable. But not knowing that there are those possibilities and issues no supervisors of programs know what to require, request, etc. And what's more, they wouldn't know how to supervise because they don't know. Do you know, for example, if what he's saying has anything to do with what I'm saying? And if you were supervising my work with her family, am I doing a good job? Can you support me in my efforts like a supervisor should? Can you properly criticize me? Reinforce what I'm doing? No. So you have a system within each service area, education, church, etc. And church is a great example. The worst, you know, you have the best and the brightest. Well, you know who deaf ministers are? The worst and the poorest. They come into deaf ministry. Even if they're okay, there's nobody to support them. Young ministers need lots of help. And they don't get it. And they either go one or two ways. They stay bad, or they get a big head. And they get worse. And it's the same in every single area.
Well, I have 7 minutes left, but did you want to talk a little bit about people becoming deaf later in life and people in nursing homes, like your other program? And did you want to talk about that?
Not really, except to say that all deaf people are not alike at all. There is a tremendous spectrum of deaf and hard of hearing people. Speakers, non-speakers. Signers, non-signers. People became deaf at 80, 70, 60, 50, 40. People who benefit from hearing aids, people that don't benefit from hearing aids. People that want intervention by deaf experts, people that don't want. So choice is really what we're looking at, so that they have people who are really experts and can set standards for communities. At the same time, deaf people have choices within mainstream environments, because they might not want, in a domestic violence situation, to come to a center where they're known and start talking about being raped by the other person that is known. But without those kinds of service centers, I don't believe you'll ever, ever get even barely minimal services in schools or social services, criminal justice programs anywhere in the United States. There is only one domestic violence program for deaf women in the United States. One. And that's in Seattle. The rest aren't even available. And what is the key to domestic violence intervention by service providers? Listen. And communication. And without that, the service, the whole meat of the service, isn't there. The whole meat of a pastor's work is basically back and forth to individuals and to groups. And without that, you're just handcuffed. No matter how much good intention is there, that does not mean that hearing people can't serve deaf people, and that deaf people cannot serve hearing people. It's happening more effectively all the time. And I think oftentimes works well when you have deaf counselors counseling hearing people and deaf teachers teaching hearing people. We all need that kind of diversity. And at a time when conservatism seems to be the thing, the language will be English. At a time when we're stressing similarities and people who are different are, we no longer say they're communist or they're gay as we did in the 60s. Now, there's something else. There's a stress on sameness. And that becomes a problem when you're trying to say, you know, American Sign Language is okay. Setting up special programs for whatever needy group is okay. So we're living at a time in which the kinds of things we've been working to set up have a couple strikes against them. And that includes people trying to do that sort of thing in any area. In churches, there's pressure not to admit gay and lesbians. There's pressure not to admit anyone who might say abortion and choice might be okay. There's pressure to say, shut them out. Or only accept them and shut out the others. Sameness, sameness, instead of all the skills that are necessary to bring in diversity. And there's a lot of skills needed for that. So that's a whole lot to just dump out. There really are a lot of issues. 2 minutes. Any questions, comments?
I just want to add that part of the problem with the services is the deaf culture itself. When you have a new service, many deaf people will not take advantage of that service because we never had it before, so why do we need it now? So they don't have that experience, or they don't have other friends that went there and said, oh, it's great, wonderful, and share that story. So often, you know, people are amazed that they have the service and nobody's coming. You know, because of that deaf culture, they just kind of avoid things that they're not familiar with. Same thing with church. A lot of the deaf don't go to church because we never had church when we grew up. I mean, we went with our parents, but it wasn't really church. It was just a building and a lot of people moving around and mouth moving, but that was all it was. So they're that part of that culture that keep people from trying things.
And when you're trying to set up and get grant money to support programs, you're asking people who have no familiarity with what you want and what your vision is. And they keep saying, show us where the deaf people are and get them to all get a consensus. Show us it's needed. Well, most deaf people, grassroots deaf people, wouldn't know domestic violence services from. So in many cases, they don't know what the services are, and they oftentimes don't know what the issues are that drive the services. So it's an extremely difficult kind of focus to go on. You're right.
I wanted to agree with you when you said about many deaf having bad experiences or no experience. They have a hard time trusting right. The system, you know, so to speak. You know, they prefer to go and they interact with friends and for help instead of going to a service with professionals, whatnot, or to go to church, you know, with a pastor. And it's defensive.
I hear many stories about deaf people that go to church and they grab onto a favorite pastor whose sign language skills is wonderful, who knows a lot about deaf culture, and then suddenly he burned out and he quit, and all the deaf are, where'd he go? And then they maybe are looking for another pastor, they can't find one, and little by little the deaf are, and they're gone. And you know how hard it is to pull in the sheep, but when you got them, you want to hold on to them, but if you lose them again, it's hard to get them back again. You know, they got that little bit of a bitter taste, and oh, I know what church is like. You know, they left me. I didn't leave the church, they left me. You know, it's kind of tough. Yeah.
And it's not just giving services. You know, it really is, there's so much potential that we all have and lose when any one person is not up. And it goes both ways. Two examples. Deaf man who did have mental health problems, but not terribly bad at a particular time, and was explaining to workers, regular old run-of-the-mill caseworkers, that something about his landlord, or he said, I don't know what the exact sign was at this time, and he said, he actually used the sign for Lord, so it's something like landlord. The interpretation was, he's psychotic. Landlord. Switch that around. Lord of the land. The interpretation was, he thought he was God. He was medicated, institutionalized. That was one of the main reasons for submitting to the court to take the fourth child. Now, if you've ever dealt with government agencies and tried to get those jerks to back up, change a file, correct a stance, man, it ain't easy. And they buck and they... Example two. Police officer stops five deaf people in a car. Gets the deaf person out of the car, obviously drunk. Tries to communicate. Now he's unempowered. He's impaired. He's trying to do his job. Trying to administer drunk driving test. I want you to walk that line. Now, smart deaf person says what? Huh?
Oh, cheeky.
Huh? What's that? Deaf. I want you to touch your finger to your nose. I want you to do this. What does the deaf person say? Huh? Huh? Five cops, no work getting done, 45 minutes of bullcrap. They give up and they let the guy go. Now, it works both ways. The driver loses, the four people in the car lose, the cop loses, his department loses, everybody feel well. The one deaf guy probably feels fine. He feels great. But you see how ineffective it was? And the cop just said to me, what could I have done? Well, I'm not sure there's any one thing they could have done, but they could have had some training to feel a lot more empowered and comfortable and nailed the guy. And he felt like he couldn't. And so you're working with providers who do have lots of skills, oftentimes, and they just can't get them out. And so you've got these great potentials just sitting and not coming forth and blossoming. Thank you very much. We are over the limit. Thank you.